Today is Flower Communion Sunday, a Sunday service celebrated in the majority of Unitarian Universalist churches around the country and around the world as their last official church service of the year. It is a beautiful service, one of hope for the future and one of faith, that by living a public life of integrity and good works, real and necessary changes can be made in the days and months and years ahead, whatever they may be, wherever they may be needed. But what is the origin of this Flower Communion service? From where did it originate? And why do we have it as one of the few truly Unitarian Universalist Church Year celebrations? There are various stories, various versions of the same story, various versions of different stories, some long, some short, some so fragmented it's hard to know what is absolutely accurate. But I found one book by a gentleman named Richard Henry. It was published in 1999, and it is apparently the only official biography of Norbert Fabian Chapek. And from this, I glean some consistent bits and pieces, which I'd like to share with you today. But before I do that, I just want to talk a little bit about my struggle with the word communion in the theme of this service today. Communion to me, and to many of you, I assume, carries with it the image of bread and wine becoming, or symbolizing becoming, the body and blood of Christ. I was not raised with this concept personally, since I wasn't raised anything but UU, but I am very aware of this word and of this symbolism, and it is troubling to me to have this language used in a Unitarian Universalist church. But then again, the word church is troubling to me, and so is the word sermon, and even the word minister or pastor or preacher when it comes right down to it. But those are words for another day and another time. At this moment, I just want to talk about the word communion. Since for Unitarian Universalists, we have two significant services that are particular to our faith, and they both, interestingly enough, have the word communion in them. The first is the water communion ceremony, which is held at the beginning of the new church year. And then we have this service, the flower communion service, which comes at the end of the church year. For some, the word communion is holy and sacred, laden with deep meaning and a connection to something powerful and spiritual. For others, it is a word laden with discomfort and the image of cannibalism, eating the body and blood of Christ when the act of transubstantiation actually occurs, and the bread and wine are no longer symbols, but have become something far more real than that. I have always steered away from the word communion and from the act of taking communion. I am from the second group of people who feel that this is not a comfortable thing to partake in. But once I almost did take communion. It was while I was at seminary, and we had just finished watching a very powerful film entitled Romero, a true account of a Salvadoran archbishop whose name was Oscar Romero, who was assassinated because of his strong words against the corruption in his country. He was a liberation theologian whose stance eventually even became a threat to the church itself. This was a distressing and graphic film, which left all of us emotionally drained, angry, and filled with a renewed sense of urgency and purpose to be strong voices ourselves when we were called to do so. After the film, we were all invited to come forward and to take a part in the communion service. But this time, we were told, the bread and the wine were not the body and blood of Christ, but they were reminders of what we must do in this lifetime, with this call to ministry, with this call to social justice. When we were to drink the wine and eat the bread, we were in the act of eating and drinking of those things. We were to feel how they went into our systems and became a part of us. We were told to feel the bread in our mouth and on our teeth. And we were to taste the wine on our lips and on our tongues, to feel how they ran down our throats. We were told that in this act of taking this communion, social justice was at that moment not an idea, but something that became a part of who we were. For the first time in my life, I wanted to take communion. In that moment of explanation, of the expansion of thought and imagination, to look at something and see it signifying something else, I could understand the act of taking communion. I stood with everyone else and started to walk toward the aisle, but I couldn't go more than a few steps before I stopped, because the idea of something going into my body and becoming something else inside of me seemed rather creepy and not terribly rational. And so I sat down, a bit disappointed that I couldn't override these thoughts and just go with the flow. But I couldn't do what didn't feel right. My own central core of ethics and integrity wouldn't allow me to do this. But I never forgot that day and that film and that story and that idea of what communion in a church might be. And so today, when we are having our own communion service, I thought of that day again. What that day had in common with this day is that we are all being asked to take something familiar to us, in this case, flowers, and when we hold them in our hand, they become a part of us. This is an act of communion with a small c, an act of coming together. When we place the flowers in the vase, each person one at a time, this act symbolizes our free will to come here as individuals. And when the flowers one by one become a bouquet, they symbolize our community of diversity, diverse people, diverse thoughts, diverse lifestyles, and diverse beliefs. But the bouquet also symbolizes that it is when we join together that we see a rainbow of color and a world of possibility. And later on, at the end of the service, when you are all asked to come forward and choose a flower that speaks to you in some particular way, you are taking into yourself, once again, a small piece of someone else into your heart, that person, unknown to you, who brought that particular flower. And this is a symbol of communion, the taking in of something ordinary, and by our encounter with it, it becomes something greater within us all. When Norbert Chopik created this flower communion service for the Unitarian Church in Prague, seated at the foot of the Charles Bridge in Czechoslovakia, he did so in order to bring a bit of spirituality into an otherwise quite cerebral congregation. And he did so with the intention of broadening out the concept of what it means to be religious, what it means to be a community of believers, and what it means to come together as a people of faith and of conviction and of relevance. When Norbert chose the flower for this service, he did so because he knew that bread and wine would conjure up negative associations in the minds of many who had left the Catholic Church. In choosing the flower to be the symbol for this ceremony of transformation, he did so with the eye of a poet, understanding that nature is all around us as much as it is a part of us, and we of it. He did not merely see a flower. He saw the eye of God and God's love for all the earth and for everything upon it. And in our taking and sharing of a flower, we take and we share of ourselves. So who was this man? Born in 1870 in a Bohemian village, which later became a part of Czechoslovakia, Norbert Fabian Chopik was a young son of an agnostic father and a Roman Catholic mother. From a young age, Norbert was a sensitive person, drawn to a spiritual and religious way of life, contemplating becoming a priest. He moved away from the church as a young man, however, when he noticed all too frequently the hypocrisy of the priests, that the words they spoke of love were not necessarily the actions against the pupils that he studied with, which were those of abuse. Still filled with idealism and a pull toward a life of purpose, Norbert made friends with a young Baptist evangelist and soon fell into evangelizing himself, and eventually he became a Baptist minister. In his studies toward ministry, however, he read that the early Christians in Bohemia and in Moravia practiced a different type of Christianity than the one that he was familiar with. He read of a Christianity that valued the spiritual life more than the practice of dogma, which was such a free and expansive version of Christianity from what he had been exposed to previously that the discovery sat well with him, and that became his theology. Of course, what always happens when a person finds a new voice within the old guard is that one is seen as a threat to the status quo. Although Norbert's preaching and his writings were well regarded and well received by the lay people in the church who heard his words, those in the upper echelons of the Baptist church were very troubled by what they heard and made their concerns known quite strongly to Norbert, strongly enough that he made the decision to leave Europe and to sail to America. To America, where he understood that religious freedom was front and center in that nation, and that as a young nation, it would be more open to liberal Christianity. This was in the year 1914. Not long after arriving in New York, Norbert accepted a call to a Baptist church. But within 6 months, he was tried for heresy even there because of his all too liberal sermons from the pulpit. He was exonerated, but he did have to leave that church. He was then called to yet another Baptist church, this one in a congregation in New Jersey. It seemed as though it would be a better fit for Norbert theologically. While newly settling in there, however, his wife died, leaving him with 8 young children. Norbert eventually married again, fathered 3 more children, and his second wife then also died. Norbert now had 11 children and no one to help, until he met a young student by the name of Maya Oktavec, 18 years younger than he, with whom he fell in love, and she with him, and thus began a strong and loving union of equals. Maya was supportive of Norbert's liberal theology, thinking along those same lines herself, and actually encouraging him to leave the Baptist church altogether sooner rather than later. Well, not long after their marriage, 2 of their children visited a Unitarian church with some of their friends, and they came home and told their parents about it. And Norbert and Maya attended the following Sunday and were very excited to have discovered a liberal religious home that spoke to their passion for social justice in the world, but also spoke to the promise that it is works and not dogma that is what is front and center in any religion that has the chance to make a difference in the world. In his diary, Norbert wrote, "I cannot be a Baptist anymore, even in compromise. The fire of new desires, new worlds, is burning inside me." 7 years later, in 1921, Norbert and Maya returned to Czechoslovakia, where, with the great assistance from the American Unitarian Association, they founded a Unitarian church in Prague, situated, as I had said before, at the foot of the Charles Bridge. The name of this church was Unitaria. In 1926, Maya was also ordained into the Unitarian ministry, and by no means was she Norbert's little helpmeet. Maya and Norbert worked together as co-ministers, serving the congregation, providing marriage and pastoral counseling, among others, and having as many as 66 attending leadership training classes. And they provided religious education courses for all ages. In 20 years' time, the Prague Church grew to about 3,000 members, and Unitarianism established itself in Czechoslovakia. The services at the church were mostly lectures. There was no singing, no prayers, no rituals of any kind. since most of the people had come from a Catholic background, and they appreciated the freedom of the Unitarian Church in its clear-headed search for truth and meaning. But eventually some people felt that a sense of spirituality was missing. It was at this time that Chopic drew from his Catholic and Baptist backgrounds and created the Flower Service. It was not called the Flower Communion Service. It was simply called the Flower Service. Recognizing that the beauty of the world lay in nature and surrounded humanity, and that God's hand had created the nature and that humanity, and that in every human heart and breast, therefore lay a piece of God. The Flower Service was well received and became a yearly event to be celebrated when the first summer flowers were in bloom. Matters were worsening in Europe during these years, but Chopic's outlook was always positive and uplifting. As his biographer, Richard Henry, observed, his was a sun-drenched pre-Holocaust faith. Chopic preached that religion was inner harmony, the precondition of strong character, good health, joyful moods, and a victorious creative life. Yet his message was also seen as being inherently subversive, because free religion, as Chopic practiced it, also sought political freedom. In his early days, Chopic had fought hard for the independence of Czechoslovakia, and when he came back years later from the United States, Czechoslovakia was free. But then Adolf Hitler was rising in power, and Europe was in crisis. The Nazi occupation spread. Czechoslovakia had hundreds of thousands of refugees to care for, and Unitarians in Prague and in Boston, brought together by the Chopics, worked together with the Quakers to raise funds in order to provide safe passage out of Europe and to aid those who could not leave. Chopic never halted with his strong words from the pulpit. Fully aware that the words he spoke were seen as treacherous, he never, ever shied away from speaking the truth from the pulpit. In a sermon he gave in 1938, where he spoke about resistance to the coming occupation, he said, "We are today the only nation in the whole of Europe that is ready to resist oppression. Confronting our descendants, we will never have to feel ashamed of the fact that as a small nation in the middle of Europe, we were ready to defend human dignity, freedom, and justice from violence, law, lies, and lawlessness." 6 months after these words were spoken, the German army occupied Prague, crushing the resistance. Although most of the democratic institutions and universities were closed, the state-recognized churches, among them Unitaria, were allowed to remain open, and the Unitarian community remained strong. Norbert turned 70, and the church held a celebration in his honor, and as their gift to him, they gave him a shortwave radio. Chopic sermons continued to address the political climate even as the occupation became stronger, and Maya was encouraged by Norbert to go to the United States in order to get more funding for the refugees. She went reluctantly, knowing full well that she and Norbert may never see each other again. Not long after she left, Norbert was placed under surveillance by the Gestapo and was brought in for questioning. He was released, but not long after, the secret police broke into his home and arrested him for listening to foreign news on that very radio that he had been given as a gift. Listening to the radio, listening to foreign news at that time, was a crime under the occupation. The Gestapo also arrested his 29-year-old daughter, Zora. They confiscated the radio and Chopic's writings as evidence of high treason. Norbert spent a year awaiting trial in a Dresden prison, was found guilty of treason, but then ruled by the court that the year in prison that he'd already served would count as his confinement, and he was to be released. His daughter was sent to Germany for forced labor by the Gestapo. And then, completely disregarding the ruling of the court, the Gestapo took Chopic and sent him to Dachau, where he spent the last 14 months of his life. He died on October 12, 1942, from medical experiments, where he was poisoned by gas. Not many of his writings from prison survived, but in his last letter written to Maya the night before the transport to Dachau, he wrote, "I am faithful to my best and highest hopes, resolve, and belief, wishing everyone well, believing in the future good of all of you, the family, the nation, humanity, and especially those most sorely tried." Maya only found out about Norbert's death after the war had ended. Never wavering in her support and belief in the life of her husband and in the strong religious stands that he took, and not wanting to let his death be for naught, she took the flower service ceremony from the Unitaria Church in Prague to the First Parish Unitarian Church in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where the tradition soon spread to other Unitarian Universalist churches. And it is now here with us today, almost 60 years later, a ceremony to remind us to have hope in the midst of darkness, to have courage in the midst of despair, to stand strong when we feel most weak, and to never forget the lives given for this free and liberal religion we are so honored to be a part of. There is still so much work to be done in the world. Let us continue to be the keepers of the dream.